This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Audrey Raj. Today I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu,
Arvini Raj,
and we are talking about home-based food businesses. You know, does Malaysia need to implement more regulations? Think about hygiene and standards when, you know, if these, because these home-based food businesses, in one state in particular, in the states, New Jersey, mm-hmm. they're illegal because, you know, they're really particular about hygiene standards and sanitation and things like that, right?
Yeah, it's but it's also a regulation that was implemented in 1906. So, you know, it's super, super old.
And every other state in the states, it's fine, right?
It's fine. So every other state has allowed it as long as you don't make more than a certain amount in a year.
Right.
But New Jersey, you are completely not allowed to sell out of your kitchen.
All right. Looking at some of the feedback we've received on this question, there's one here by Tony who says, clearly we are short of standards, bylaws and proper regulations. Yes, regulate home cooked food. Have you tried Googling for Malaysian building bylaws and regulations for restaurant eateries? Please point me to the actual site if you can find it.
Oh,
whoa. Another one here by Eugene, and I really like this. My mother is a home baker. She's been doing it for 4 to 5 years now. It started off as a hobby and people liked it, so she was encouraged to sell them. Hygiene-wise, we keep our kitchen clean. Well, partly because I used to be a restaurant chef. But I realized that my mother's hygienic senses are higher than any restaurants and the MPK. No complaints were filed before. If we were to regulate these home cooks, you are actually taking their privileges to have hobbies. And these hobbies are costly. There's no such thing as free things. So if someone wants something from a person's hobby, they got to pay, right? But I do agree they should get a typhoid jab. That's from okay. Eugene. We've also got another one here by numbers ending 8883, and it goes like, let's be fair, hotel food may not be 100% hygienic. Hawker stall or home cooked food sometimes can be better.
Mm-hmm.
Tastes better, I think, is what this person is saying.
I like what Eugene said about how his mom's standards are higher than the restaurants, because I think when restaurants have to pay for infrastructure and they have to pay for, you know, employees and workers and, you know, all sorts of other things, permits and stuff, then they sort of compromise on the food and the cleanliness because they just want to make money. You have to recoup your investment.
Right.
So it becomes like a vicious circle.
Yeah.
It doesn't excuse them, but I'm just saying that, you know, maybe people who cook in their kitchens are more, you know, are more sort of willing to take care of the cleanliness and the hygiene when they're sending food that is bought by other people.
Right.
So this is something that our producer Christine mentioned just over the break. She said that, you know, she tends to order in food and have food delivered to us, you know, because we're working during lunchtime, right? And she says that she's noticed that the orders that come from these home-based food businesses, they've never gone wrong. She's always got her order right. But some of the bigger restaurants that she's ordered from via GrabFood or Foodpanda, they're the ones that have made mistakes with their orders. So maybe those home-based businesses, they pay more attention to detail and they personalize their offerings as well. Mm. And so, you know, you just feel like you've got that extra touch when you get a delivery from
them. Human touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, get in touch with us. Tell us what you think. 018-789-8899. Also on Twitter and on Instastory at BFM Radio. Do Malaysian home-based food businesses need more regulation? But before that, let's move on to the story about WeWork missing a very important part in their IPO filing.
This is very interesting because I know that the Morning Run team was covering it because they're about to get listed in September. And a startling fact is that this is a company that is worth $47 billion US and they're going with an all-male board of directors. So this was a girl, a lady that I follow on Facebook. Her name is Cindy Gallup. And of course, this came out with CNBC. So their parent company, formerly known as We Company, disclosed who comprises its board in an initial public offering prospectus early on Wednesday. Among the seven members, not a single one is female, and the company was most recently valued, like I said, at that price. So as of last month, every S&P 500 company had at least one female director on its board. Okay, so there's 500 of the you know, the key ones. And it's become a more prominent issue in recent years as major investors such as BlackRock and State Street have pushed back against companies with all male directors. So having a more diverse board, it seems, an avenue toward better shareholder returns. So in a couple of weeks, the WeWork is expected to launch a roadshow. We'll meet with investors and seek to drum up support for what's likely going to be a multi-million dollar stock sale. Its underwriters, includes JP Morgan and good old Goldman Sachs, have also contributed $6 billion towards a credit facility contingent upon the IPO. So I'm surprised. They do have several women in management positions, but no, this is the co-founder and wife of Andy Newman. She serves as the chief brand and impact officer, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Barrett as the co-president and chief legal officer. So I won't go through about all the people who are there. So they WeWork has a triple class share structure and will be a controlled company, making it difficult for an outside investor to wage a proxy contest that would alter the makeup of the board. So amid a boom in initial public offerings in 2019, women have been gaining ground in the C-suite. In the first half of the year, 13 women CEOs have taken companies public, representing about 15% of the total IPOs over that period. That's good. Oh. So that's the highest proportion of any year going back to at least 2014. And then historically, women were more absent from the boardrooms of companies making their debut. So a study released last month by 2020 Women on Boards found that 37% of the 75 largest IPOs from 2014 to 2016 debuted with all male boards. But in the last few years, it became a much less common occurrence. So that's, I guess, 2017 onwards, especially among larger private companies. So this is WeWork aiming for a debut in September. And of course, they're also here in Malaysia. Makes you wonder.
So what does this mean? It means that if there's from what I understand, it means that once they've set up their board of directors, because of how the company functions, it's difficult for someone on lower levels or even upper management to sort of infiltrate the board of directors. So it's sort of cemented.
Yes. If you look at the IPO filing and you look at the organizational structure for WeWork, it is very confusing. You've got a circle, you've got another branch right under that, and then it branches out again. It looks more like an Aztec drawing, like a hieroglyphic, rather than it does like a normal company organizational structure. So I guess it could be difficult for those in the management structure to actually get up there to the C-suites.
Just for your information, like in Malaysia, you know, we've been trying to get to those numbers in a while right now. So apparently the last figures, top 100, right? Mm. Top 100, close about over 25% have female board directors. They're already aiming towards 30%. So at least they have one. So which is progressive. I'm just surprised. I guess it's not a law. I don't know. Yeah. I think in Malaysia, it is sort of a requirement. Oh, we're not yet a requirement, but they're moving towards at least 30%. And that's sort of, you know, featured well. We do name them if they don't have. I think from the top 100, maybe one, doesn't even have a female.
Yeah, the only reason you shouldn't have or wouldn't have a female in your board of directors is if you have 100% male staff, which doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? There's no logical or there's no realistic situation where your company would be made out of 100% men. Mm. So if it's like that, then why wouldn't you have a representative on your board of directors? Especially like today, especially the way companies function and companies move today. It's weird. It's weird that big companies that want to go public and have like IPOs and stuff still follow this trend and then make it difficult for other people to sort of ascend to those ranks. You know, they sort of block it off.
But you know what the famous excuse is? You know, we're not just going to put someone on the board of directors just because she's female, just to, you know.
Right.
To have a female representative on the board. We have the people who are up there deserve to be there, are pioneers in the company, blah, blah, blah. That's what you usually hear. But then, I really like the stat that said that as of last month, every single S&P 500 company had at least one female director on its board. And it comes down to, having a more diverse board, creating better... There's a correlation with shareholder returns, you know, if you have a more diverse board. So... Right. Why not go that way?
So, I mean, and the chief brand and impact officer didn't realize that, and she's a woman. Wife of the founder.
All right. Well, coming back to our main story, does Malaysia need more regulations for home-cooked food businesses? We have more messages to come back to in just a bit. But before that, here's a little bit of The Strokes with Soma on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.